More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich. In October of 1960, an explosion ripped through the Tennessee Eastman Company factory in Kingsport, Tennessee. It killed 16 people and injured more than 300 and threw Kingsport's largest employer into disarray at the time. For playwright Lori Matthews, it's a family story as well. Her parents, her grandfathers, and three of her uncles were all on shift when the blast happened. Matthews lives in Stoughton, Wisconsin now, but was born in Kingsport, and the story of the explosion has been part of her family's oral history for her entire life. In fact, her play, October Before I Was Born, is a fictionalized account based on the stories her mother told her about that day. The play opens tonight at the Milwaukee Chamber Theater. Matthews tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North more about that fateful day more than 50 years ago.
On October 4th of 1960, the Aniline building at the Tennessee Eastman Company, which was the area's largest employer, exploded. 12,000 people were at work. The parking lots for employee cars were near the explosion. It was at a time of day where one shift was leaving and another shift was coming on, so a lot of people that normally wouldn't have been there at the same time were there. Eastman sits on the river in town, and most of the people who work there live in the outer rural communities. It pulls in employees from a 6-county radius.
Is it still there?
It's still
okay.
There.
Right.
It makes chemicals and dyes and plastics. If it weren't there, the economy in the region would be desperate. It's really the heartbeat of the money in the area. And at the time of this explosion, there weren't cell phones. Most families had one car, and the person who was at work would have the car at work. People lived 6 or 8 or 12 or 20 miles away from the plant. Employees weren't able to get to their cars to get out. The phones went down. People were injured. There was a massive fire to get under control. And I come from a very large extended family, and my family's experience with that evening concerns people gathering at my grandmother and grandfather's house. They had 11 children, and 6 of them were at the plant when the explosion occurred. So people waiting to see who can get home and what messages can trickle in.
And so what made you think, as a playwright, I want to put this on stage? And then once you decided to do it, how did you decide to create it in the way that you did?
Over the years, I kept thinking somewhere down the line, I do want to include this in something that I write because it's such a huge part of Kingsport history. And even though I've lived in Wisconsin for almost 16 years now, if you ask me where I'm from, I'll still say I'm from East Tennessee. Not even from Tennessee, East Tennessee. We're very specific about the Appalachian region and very proud of it. And yet the stereotypes that you see of hillbillies and Appalachian people are very different from the truth of what's happening there. So I wanted to include this terrible day that also gave the community a chance to shine in its ability to be self-sufficient, to respond to an emergency, to pull together, to mourn the people who were lost, to encourage the people who were injured, to put lives back together. I felt that this was a worthy piece of historical information to include in something that might reach an audience that might look at the region differently.
And also, it's interesting that you chose to fictionalize the people. I mean, obviously, there are parallels. Mm-hmm. You know, your mother appears and your grandmother, but they're not literally those people. Did making it a more fictionalized account open it up to you as a dramatist? Were you able to find other things, taking it away from your family-specific story?
Yes. In fact, the seed of the actual script comes from a different kind of stress that our family endured. My father was on life support in 2003, and my mother was having a hard time coming to terms with the fact that she was going to have to make a decision to take him off of life support. And my brother and sister and I and many of our extended family were filling up the waiting room of ICU at Holston Valley Hospital in Kingsport. And the week went on, and I was struck by how inappropriate our reaction to each other was at times and how silly we could get. At one point, we were watching the movie Airplane, and I remember thinking, my dad is dying, and I'm watching Airplane, and I'm laughing. Is that okay? Or I'm having a fight with my brother, and again, I'm thinking, he's really on my nerves, and we're really going at each other, but we're in the waiting room of a hospital while our dad is dying, and is that okay? And the tension of the waiting made things happen in a way that you don't see portrayed often in art, because usually when we reach that moment where the decision needs to be made about ending someone's life, things get very sober and sentimental. And I was astounded that my family wasn't playing by any of these rules. You know, it was utter chaos. And I wanted to do something to explore why that happens. When you close up people in a room in a dire situation, why does it not play out in a very predictable, noble, heroic way? Why do people turn on each other one minute and sob into each other's arms the next minute? I wanted to do something with that, but I didn't want to use the actual situation. I put that on the back burner. And when we were going through the same sort of thing with my mother 5 years later, I was awake with her in her hospital room when a nursing assistant came in to take her temperature and her vitals. And the last name on her tag was the name of one of the employees who had perished in the accident. And my mom immediately, you know, she was maybe 5 hours out of recovery room at this time, starts talking about the accident again. And she said, this happened in October before you were born, which I knew, but for some reason that night it struck me as something profound. And I started doing the math and realized I was born 9.5 months after that incident. And my mother had never offered any explanation for why she changed from being a career-minded woman of the early 1960s, you know, she was sure she wanted to go places, to starting a family. And I began to suspect that the concern for my dad that night may have played an important role in my existence. And losing a second parent now, knowing we were going to go through a similar sort of waiting period over the next year with my mom, I decided to put those two things together, the accident and the waiting, and kind of scrapbook the story that had been in my family forever, but to do it with three characters that could butt heads in the same way that I experienced with other family members when
my
dad was dying.
They're almost trapped together.
They are trapped together,
And in a way, it's an old-fashioned type of drama.
Yes.
It's that one set. Everybody comes in and out of this one place. You don't change locales.
Right.
You hear about the outside world coming in through the radio, or somebody's gone and they've come back and they say this is
right.
What's going on. But we're all stuck waiting with them.
Exactly.
And it makes it's a different kind of dramatic tension.
Yes.
And which I really enjoyed. Again, I felt it was in old fashioned. And I don't mean that in a negative way, you know, but it really harkens back to the kind of dramas that we probably had in America in the 50s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Which actually comes back to the kind of movies and plays I grew up watching. And even though this was my first attempt to write something straight through in real time. The play is 90 minutes long and it covers 90 minutes of these characters' lives. So I did away with the idea of episodes or flash forward or backward or play with time. I wanted that trapped feeling. And to build suspense over the six people who are missing when the play starts, the really tough part of writing the play and the thing that Michael Wright at Milwaukee Chamber Theater worked with me early on, and Jackie Troy, who was the literary manager at that time, was how do we let the audience feel something for all six of these people who never appear on stage so that as we learn what's happened to them, we care. And I didn't want to overload information about characters you never met, but I wanted you to know just from the little bit that was said about them, who was the problem child and who was the reliable one and how they interact together.
And how important they are to these three people that we do meet.
Yes, yeah. Yes. The suspense of the play is built around learning one by one what's happened to the six people who are missing at the start of the play. And it's compounded by the fact that Anne, the character who most resembles my mother, is 8 months pregnant, and they're trying to keep her calm and healthy because she has a tendency to be a little high-strung or hysterical in the face of disaster. So
how is it seeing it in the rehearsal hall and on stage? Is it different than you expected it to be?
It's very exciting. I've written other things that have played in one form or another or been read in one form or another other places. And it's always humbling to any playwright, I imagine, to think that you've written something that nobody could possibly interpret it anyway except the way you meant it. But then when you hear it read out loud, you think, oh, that's not what I meant. But that hasn't been the case at Milwaukee Chamber Theater at all. Michael Wright was one of the first people to take an interest in the script 4 years ago and to encourage me to actually stick with it and polish it and go through a rather painful, in a good way, process of editing and rewriting. And we're now on our 19th draft of it. I think the first time Michael read it, we were on maybe the fourth draft of it.
Well, Laurie Matthews, it has been such a pleasure meeting you, and best of luck
with
the play and all future plays. I hope you'll come back when you have another one.
Thank you.
Stoughton playwright Laurie Matthews' play is called October Before I Was Born. It opens this evening at Milwaukee Chamber Theater and runs through March 9th. There's a link to more from WUWM.com/Lake Effect. One last break, and then why some Milwaukeeans are gearing up for Chinese New Year, even though the Year of the Horse actually began almost a month ago. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.